this truth of my head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. On yesterday's program, I mentioned a couple folks commenting to one of our science videos on our YouTube channel, and I thought I would share those comments and my response, mostly just as an exercise. You know, when people are insulting or dismissive, what's a good way to respond if you want to have a hope of furthering the conversation? We could do that. Also yesterday, what an amazing conversation with Rusty Thomas, whose son Jeremiah died of cancer this past summer, but not before having a conversation with Greg Abbott, the governor of the state of Texas. What a courageous young man. When the Make-A-Wish Foundation came to him, they thought that his wish was too political for them. That's too bad, but they did. He wanted to talk to the governor of Texas to abolish abortion in their state. They mentioned there's such a thing as a legacy wish, where a child who's dying could make a wish for something that might not happen until after he passes away. So with that in mind, word got out that Jeremiah wanted to talk to the governor, and sure enough, he's in the hospital. Rusty described the circumstances that very hour, how sick that Jeremiah was, yet when the phone call came in, he was truly extraordinary. And so the governor, now if there's one thing I disagreed with a bit with Rusty yesterday, it was Rusty's confidence in Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas. I don't share that confidence, but hey, you know, there's hope. Greg Abbott, like many states, the guy who's attorney general often ends up becoming the governor. And so Greg Abbott was attorney general in Texas for a long time. And our dear friend Mark Crutcher is down there in Denton, Texas. That's Life Dynamics. And you might recall the programs we did with Mark. We would play the recordings of women calling into abortion clinics, every abortion clinic, not only in Texas and in Colorado, but in the whole country, saying that she's 13 years old, she's 14, 15 years old, and the man who impregnated her is 24 years old or whatever. And so obviously rape. And the abortion mill systematically would tell her how to get an abortion without getting the rapist in trouble. And so they basically became an accomplice to the rape after the fact, helping the rapist escape being caught. And so when Greg Abbott is the attorney general, Mark Crutcher, Life Dynamics, they brought this to his attention and the attention of the attorney general's office. And just like we did here in Colorado, we went to meet with the attorney general. We couldn't do that. We met with his top attorneys. And this was Joe Scott, Leslie Hanks, and myself. And we played these recordings of abortion clinics in Colorado violating the law, which requires mandatory reporting of suspected child sexual abuse. So if a young girl in her early teens is impregnated by a man in his mid-20s or later, then that's prima facie, that is evidence of sexual assault. And instead of being concerned for the girl and trying to protect her from being continually raped by the same man, and instead of trying to find out if we can catch this man and bring him to justice, they become accomplices after the fact, and they help the man get away with raping this young girl. That didn't happen at one or two abortion mills. That happened at many hundreds of abortion mills. And you could hear the entire recordings. They were recorded on reel-to-reel professional operation. This is investigative reporting. This is an investigation. And in Colorado, when we met with the attorney general's office, you know what they told us? They said, there's nothing we can do. What do you mean there's nothing? Planned Parenthood is training their staff to violate the law in regards to men raping young girls. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing we can do. You know what they told us? They said, you have to investigate. They said, we can't investigate. We don't have the budget. You have to investigate. Oh, we're private. We have to investigate. Is that insane or what? They said, there's nothing we can do. So I said, well, how about this? How about the state attorney general send a letter to the sheriffs in each of Colorado's counties warning them that this is what is being done by the abortion industry to young girls? Maybe the sheriffs will care. In state after state where we've really pushed this, it's always been a pro-life Republican attorney general who has done nothing at all. Greg Abbott is one of those who has done nothing. And I remember with the undercover videos that went viral, millions of views, Planned Parenthood not only killing the children, which is the big thing, but then dismembering them, harvesting the baby's body parts, and then selling them. And then if they'd get a baby that was delivered intact, so they get the whole baby, they got a lot more money when the baby came out intact. Recall all this? On our YouTube channel, we have a video called The Worst Abortion Video Yet. It's 3 minutes long. It's got 70-some thousand views. Very powerful. And it shows the horror of a living, intact, little baby being manhandled and mistreated by medical so-called professionals. Just turning the baby around in their hand and just to kill it. So devastating. And on Judgment Day, those medical professionals, they're going to meet that baby. That baby will testify against them on Judgment Day. And the same thing with all the children killed all over the country. Well, Greg Abbott announced an investigation in Texas into this selling baby body parts. And I don't know, that's the last I heard about it. Have you heard that they closed down Planned Parenthood in Texas? I'm asking anybody in our studio audience. I haven't heard that. Maybe it slipped under the radar. His legacy so far as being a governing official where millions of unborn children have been killed, millions over the years, and he's pretty much done nothing. So we will find out if he does fight to abolish abortion in Texas. It'd be extraordinary, and we sure hope that he does, and we pray that he does. When Rusty said that this is not to regulate child killing, regulation has backfired. This is to end child killing. This is to abolish the killing of unborn children, abortion. And of course, the personhood movement is basically a synonym for abolishing abortion. And so I'd like to remind you, regulating abortion, which is the only thing that Focus on the Family, National Right to Life, these groups have supported for the past 30 years. They have opposed efforts to actually abolish abortion, and they've only supported regulating. And when you regulate abortion, you merely prune the abortion weed and strengthen its root. Okay. Before the comments on one of our science videos on our YouTube channel, a preview of an upcoming show with Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. Fred and I, a few years back, we did a show on bumblebees and how bumblebees solved a problem that our supercomputers have a very difficult time with, and it's called the traveling salesman problem. If you have to go to six cities, so six stops, and you want to do it as efficiently as possible, not waste your time, well then, how many possible ways can you go to six different cities? If you're only going to two cities, it's obvious you go to one or the other first. There's a couple of ways you can do it. If you want to go to six cities, there are 360 different possible permutations of your route. 360. If you want to go to 10 cities, there are millions of ways you can possibly go to those 10 cities. What if you want to go to 30 cities, 100 cities? It quickly becomes a very hard problem for our most powerful computers to solve. So Fred and I reported on bumblebees. You release a bumblebee in a garden or in a laboratory where there are 20, 30 flowers, and the bumblebee instantly, you know how it'll fly up and do a couple partial circles and then go at a target, go at a flower? It solves the traveling salesman problem almost instantly. The bumblebee. Imagine how small the brain is in a bumblebee compared to a supercomputer. It just solves it. And so then the researchers, they realize, how is it possibly doing the least distance for these flowers we got out here? And then they take away a few flowers and add a flower somewhere else, and it just recalculates on the fly. It's like Google Maps, right? Recalculating. The bumblebee does it. So we do that show. Now they find out that an amoeba can do the same thing. An amoeba. For public school teachers tuning in right now, that's a single-celled organism. It doesn't even have a brain. It's one cell. After Fred and I did that show, I don't think we ever did an update on what ants could do. Ants? Turns out that ants are able to calculate the least time solution. For example, the shortest distance to their food that they found might be the longest time because there might be all sap on the ground leaking out of a tree. And if they go through the sap, it'll take forever. They might not ever get there. So they go around the sap. But if they go all the way around the sap, it might take forever to get there. So they calculate how far do we go on dry ground, and then how much of the sap do we cross in order to get to the food in the least amount of time. So it's a similar but different problem from the least distance. Well, now they find out, and they did the most brilliant research. What an experiment. They take an amoeba, a single-celled organism, and they put all tiny microchannels around it, giving it the opportunity to find food at the end of these microchannels. And so it's going to reach through to get the food. And they found out that the amoeba can calculate the solution to the traveling salesman problem virtually instantaneously, and as a result, vastly quicker than our supercomputers. How does an amoeba do that? Now, when biological organisms do things that challenge the ability of our engineers to comprehend, how is it conceivably possible that this could be happening? We did a show like this a few months ago about how could monarch butterflies find their way from Canada through the U.S. into Mexico. A monarch butterfly. How tiny is the brain of a monarch butterfly? And then an Arctic tern flying from Alaska to Hawaii. Could you imagine the challenge, the navigational challenge of doing that? Just try to comprehend it. And how many generations would end up dead in the middle of the Pacific Ocean before it honed its ability? So that the average serious challenge in evolution is an extinction-level event. You get that? The average serious challenge in evolution is an extinction-level event. Like, if they don't figure it out, the whole species is gone. They've gone extinct. And so Fred and I will be reporting on these single-cell organisms and their ability to solve the traveling salesman problem. And we'll ask a question that we do not know the answer to, but we'll ask the question in the show where a friend of Real Science Radio, Brian Fick, F-I-C-K, where Brian Fick and I talked about quantum biology. And are these monarch butterflies and Arctic terns and thousands of other species that navigate, are they using quantum mechanics? Not knowingly, obviously, but have they been designed to use these features of matter where you're talking about typically subatomic particles? How do subatomic particles behave very differently than how bricks and leaves behave? Not always subatomic, it could be atomic or molecular. But is an amoeba using quantum mechanics to accomplish its task? So Brian has agreed to come back on Real Science Radio, and we're not going to talk about this because this is a brand new, hot off the presses news story, and they've just found out that an amoeba can do this, and now give them 30 years to try to figure out how is it doing it. But what we're going to do is something that's been researched for probably 15 years now, and that's the sense of smell in various organisms, human beings, in our sense of smell, which is astounding. We have about 400 different kinds of scent receptors, right, in our nose. How is it that we can sense about 1 trillion different scents? 1 trillion. That's the latest research. 1 trillion. How could we possibly do that? And the old lock and key hypothesis, it's turned out that that's definitely not the whole story. So researchers are thinking that we are designed, or they might not use that terminology, but it's obvious, that our bodies are using quantum mechanics in order to accomplish our sense of smell. Those are two programs coming up. Fred Williams will be updating the bumblebees, solving the traveling salesman problem, ants solving the least time problem, and then the amoeba, a single-celled organism, a little bit smaller than our supercomputers, solving the traveling salesman problem. And all of this, the theme in this will be the impossibility, not because we can't imagine it, but because we explain why it would be impossible for these things to evolve by an undirected materialist process, why they cannot evolve, and then therefore, as evidence of the Creator, how brilliant and astounding our Creator is, even beyond what is obvious when you look at a sunset and a meadow and a beautiful little baby girl who's just been born. The Creator is so astounding, but in every direction we look, at every level, in every way, the brilliance and awe of our Creator, it's as though it knows no bounds. Okay, we have a video on our YouTube channel. The whole YouTube channel, we're thankful we've passed the mini milestone of 500,000 views. We're up to 578,000 views. But interestingly, you know, we've done a video on dinosaur soft tissue. Someone excerpted that video, puts together a half-hour video on dinosaur soft tissue, and it's got my arguments throughout from beginning to end. And they have, for that single video, 770,000 views. So it's approaching 1 million views just for that one video. And we're so thrilled. You know, we're thankful that even though they've ripped off our material, the goal is to reach as many people as we can. And they did so in a respectful way. And so actually, we're thankful that the word is getting out further and now to hundreds of thousands of people that dinosaurs, the bones, the skin of dinosaurs, dinosaur eggs, in fact, still have original biological material. It's truly extraordinary. And it's evidence that they're not millions of years old, because dinosaur blood wouldn't remain in the ground in Montana for 80 million years. You got to be really gullible to think that would be possible. One of our science videos, and they're not all science, there's theology, morality, crime, really interesting, fascinating, a lot of fun topics covered. If you just go to our website, kgov.com, and click on our YouTube channel, you're right there. You can look at the different playlists, the different topics we cover. And one of them is science, Real Science Radio. And so our Evidence Against the Big Bang video, thousands of views, a recent comment by a Derek Cloud. When you try to share something with someone, often an unbeliever, but it could be a believer, they might try to find a way to just dismiss you and to dismiss your argument. That's what Derek Cloud decided to do. He wrote this beneath our video, The Evidence Against the Big Bang. He wrote, "When I'm sick, I don't consult a plumber." Ha! He should talk to Randy. We got a great plumber. He knows a lot about health. But anyway, he says, "When I'm sick, I don't consult a plumber. When I want information on physics, I don't consult a radio host. Okay, so we understand his point. So I replied, hey, Derek, in this context, what you've done is commit the informal logical fallacies of poisoning the well and ad hominem attack. Right? Those are the two things he did. An ad hominem attack, instead of arguing against the evidence, you argue against the person. And poisoning the well is similar, but it's sort of preemptive. Like you're saying to other people, no matter how much science is in this video, no matter how many leading secular scientists are making these points, discount everything you hear. You're poisoning the well. So I said, Derek, here's what you've done. You've committed these two informal logical fallacies. In reality, all nine discoveries that we list in part one of our video, Evidence Against the Big Bang, all nine discoveries were made by mainstream scientists at leading institutions, some of which are the greatest scientific observations ever made. Perhaps you oppose the first discovery, which is discussed by Fermilab scientists, that's Fermi National Laboratory, admitting that the Big Bang Theory's prediction that there should be an equal amount of antimatter in the universe as compared to matter, perhaps you're disagreeing with Fermilab that that is apparently one of the greatest erroneous predictions in the history of science. Imagine that if you make a prediction and it turns out it's one of the greatest false predictions in the history of science. I mean, you should get some kind of an award for that. So George Lemaitre, when he introduced the Big Bang Theory, and that from this explosion of energy, sort of an explosion into nothing, but this energy converted into matter. And when that happens, you get an equal amount of matter and antimatter. We know that from theory, and we know that from experimentation. Empirically, we know, because we've done it in our accelerator labs, we have turned energy into matter. And for every electron you get a positron. For every proton, you get an antiproton. For every atom of matter you may get, you would get an atom of antimatter. And that's how it works. And that's not what we get. So in part one of our video, Evidence Against the Big Bang, we lay out nine observations, nine discoveries made by the world's leading institutions, each one of which contradict or undermine the predictions of the Big Bang Theory. After I responded that way, there was another unbeliever, a Mr. Monk. I know there's a TV show, Monk. I don't think it's the same person. But a Mr. Monk replied, but instead of responding to the evidence in the video, or even just addressing even that first piece of evidence from part one about the antimatter, instead of doing anything like that, he dug in on Derek's obfuscation, right? Derek is trying to obfuscate and these informal logical fallacies of poisoning the well in an ad hominem attack. And so I wrote, perhaps Monk also opposes that first piece of evidence presented, which is Fermi National Labs admitting that the Big Bang Theory's prediction that there should be an equal amount of antimatter in the universe, that prediction is apparently one of the greatest erroneous predictions in the history of science. So I say, Monk, you could see part one. Just click here. Just go up top and hit play. So Monk responds and he says, Bob Enyar, okay, so let's ask. Let's say for argument's sake, you have refuted the current scientific methodology of the Big Bang. What does that mean for science? And by the way, and when they use the word science, if you want to understand many people better, think of God, because to them, science is their God. So what does that mean for science? He's saying, what does that mean for my religion. And he adds, by the way, one of the biggest problems from what I remember from literature, he means the scientific literature, is the baryon asymmetry. So baryon asymmetry. Now, the vast majority of people in the general public would have no idea what baryon asymmetry is. Folks have a hard enough time with antimatter, but they have some idea. I mean, the general public, who people who haven't taken a science class in school in the last 30 years, they have a hard enough time with antimatter. So you talk about an atom made with a proton, an electron, and you say antimatter is like an atom where the proton is no longer positive, it's now negative, and the electron doesn't have a negative charge, it has a positive charge. That's what's called antimatter. So they have enough trouble with that, and if you call the problem, instead of calling it the missing antimatter problem, if you call it the baryon asymmetry problem, no one will have any idea what you're talking about. So the Big Bang Theory is in its safe space. It's in a safe space, like a little snowflake, because people won't know that it predicted that half of the universe should be made up of antimatter. So let's put the Big Bang Theory in its safe space, like a little snowflake, and call this the baryon asymmetry problem. So I replied, hey, Monk, thanks so much for staying on topic. Yes, it can be called baryon asymmetry, but that's a name that the general public won't understand. And then I put a link for him. If he wants to find out about the missing baryon problem, he could go to our website, rsr.org/baryons, and he'll find that. But I said, the problem you're recalling is better referred to as the matter-antimatter problem, or best, the missing antimatter problem, so that it has a name that is less foreign to the general public and that points to the enormity of the challenge. The enormity of the challenge. And by the way, just click up above. Part one begins with the missing antimatter problem in our video that you guys are dismissing because I'm a talk radio host and because Fermilab can't be believed if they are presented in a video by a talk show host. And Monk, when you wrote, let's say for argument's sake, you have refuted the current scientific methodology of the Big Bang. Monk, your question ignores the reality, as we show in the video, that there are scores of astronomers and astrophysicists at leading institutions who have publicly stated that the Big Bang model is false and only propped up by misleading claims. So I'm not the one who has refuted it, but many leading scientists have risked their careers by publicizing the theory's failure. And finally, Monk, regarding your question, if the Big Bang theory is wrong, so what? Well, please see part three of our video above for that answer. And of course, guys, part three is about the fine-tuning of the universe. The hand of the creator. Everywhere the physicist looks, everywhere he looks, he sees a cosmos that appears to be designed. And you know who that's from? That's from Richard Dawkins and Stephen Hawking. God bless you guys.